But anyway, so we're going to be in Matthew 25, verse 14. Matthew 25, 14. We're going to read a good portion of Scripture here today. Get myself situated. I think I'll just do that, in fact. Good. And then we will be off and running. Matthew 25, verse 14, we're going to read down to verse 30. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained another 2. But he had received one, or he that had received one, went and digged it in the earth, and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh, and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. Verse 21. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee. I always find this part funny. Lord, I knew thee that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. Really laying the groundwork there, isn't he? Verse 26, his Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant. Ouch. Thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury, meaning with interest. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye, ye unprofitable servant, into the outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So by way of introduction here, and I've got the rest of my, I'm closing this, don't let that bother you. I've got the rest of my verses in here, okay, don't let that upset you. I do have Bible verses with me written down. Anyway, people sometimes don't like seeing a closed Bible on a pulpit. They're in here. I don't have room, you understand. Okay, anyway, so I'm going to get right into the lesson today. So one of our main areas of life that we are to steward is to be our resources. Now, a lot of times we go to a parable like that, and any preacher, they'll get up here and go, don't worry, we're not talking about money. Well, I'm here to tell you, yes, worry. Because we're talking about your money. That's exactly what we're talking about. And that usually gets nervous laughter. That usually gets under people's skin when we start talking about people's money. But the reality is, your money is an extension of you. Your resources are an extension of you. How you use them and how you spend them tells the Lord what is inside here. Our use of finances both reveals and directs our heart. Now, God has given us a lot in this country. more than anybody else. In fact, I've got some statistics here that I think might be of interest. If you can read this, the average individual income by town in 2019. Individual income, not household income. Individual income. So let's look at these. I think these are interesting. Now, depending on where you fall, you might look at these and be surprised at how high they are. You might look at them and be surprised at how low they are. It really depends on where you're at with your own personal finances, but I think at the end we'll tell the tale. So if you look at these, Avon, Ohio, the average income of a person is $52,000. Okay. Avon Lake, which this shocked me. I thought they'd be reversed. I guess Avon Lake is not the Avon Lake I grew up with, but Avon Lake is $42,000. So a single earner in Avon Lake, the average is $42,000. North Ridgeville, we see that it's $37,000. Okay. Elyria, we see the average is $26,000. So we see it gets lower and lower. And then lastly, I have here Lorain, which is $22,000. So we look at that. We look at the spectrum. We look at Avon and go, okay, that might be normal. I look at Lorain and go, okay, that's a little bit surprising, honestly. But then here's how we contextualize this information. State of Ohio, for the whole state, the average income earned per person is $30,000. It's every working adult. But get this. Globally, the average amount of money a person will earn is $18,000 a year globally. Now, that is adjusted for cost of goods in different areas. The United Nations did a report years back and did several different graphs and variations on this information because you hear it all the time. People can, oh, well, these people are living on $2 a day. Well, yeah, but things are 2 cents over there. Things are $2 over here, so you have to adjust that properly. So globally, the proper amount adjusted for cost of living is about $18,000 a year is what people live on. Globally, like the whole world. So I ask you this. When you consider that world out there, and you consider that's the average of the world, is the average person rich or poor by our standards? Poor. The average person is poor by our standards in the world. Yet, did God just write the Bible for 21st century American Christianity? No. God wrote the Bible for all of Christianity, for all Christians of all generations. And we have a world that is averaging $18,000 a year, and he's telling that world who's making that amount of money, I want you to tithe, and I want you to give to missions, and I want you to support your pastor, and I want you to, more importantly, run your finances appropriately so that those things can be accomplished. He's telling the whole world to do that. The whole world is making $18,000. Stands to reason, if you're above the age of 18 in this room, you're probably making more than that if you're working full-time. So that is, by introduction, contextualizing what we're going to be talking about today. Finances are very different. God's gift of finances and provision is a tangible asset that we can use for him. It's a physical thing that passes through our fingers, either in cash or in checks or credit cards. It can be objectively measured in concrete amounts. It's a physical gauge of our hearts. Jesus emphasized the truth of this in the Sermon on the Mount when he said this. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So what are we ultimately talking about today? The way that we steward our finances indicates our most passionate interests. In 16 of Jesus' 38 parables, he spoke about money and possessions. One of these parables is told in what we just read, Matthew 25, 14 through 30. And this account in particular points to our accountability as stewards. So now we're going to get into some writing. Before we do that, I'll take a quick sip. And I have a basic outline there for you. I don't have too much on there. I want you to, I left area for notes. I find that I never have area for notes, so I try to leave that in outlines that I give. So I'm going to say a lot of things that are not in the outline. If you find them important, you write them down. If you don't find anything important, don't write anything down. That's up to you. Okay. Here we go. So what are we talking about today? Number one, We're going to look at the distribution of resources. Where do they come from? Well, as a wealthy businessman, as we just saw in this account, he prepared himself for a long travel abroad. He called three of his servants. He gave each servant a large sum of money to manage and multiply through investments. And then the businessman took into account a couple of things. He took account how long he was going to be gone. And then he took into account their several abilities. So this man's coming in, and he's saying, look, you're capable of doing 10. Here's 10. You're capable of doing 5. Here's 5. You're capable of doing 1. Here's 1. So that's what, and I expect usury when I come back. I expect you to take that and use it at some point. He gave each servant a large sum to manage and multiply through investments. In Matthew 25, 14 and 15, we see that. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. So we see here that resources are distributed to every man, and they're not just distributed to every man willy-nilly or just however it's supposed to. It's distributed intentionally, on purpose, on time. That means that what God has given you, he gave it to you on purpose, knowing what your capabilities are, knowing how you're going, how he wants you to use it. So it's distributed from the Lord himself. That's where it comes from. Now let's take a look a little bit here at this, the provider of the resources. Let's look at the provider of the resources. Like the master in Jesus' parable, God is the original source of every blessing. Every single thing that you have, everything from your glasses to your sweaters, Doug, to everything that you have, it comes from the Lord. Your car out there, your home, your heater, your boiler. I have a boiler, and probably one other person here has a boiler. I think y'all have furnaces. But the heating source of your home, everything comes from the Lord. The money in your pocket, the money in your 401k. Get this, your ability to develop a skill to go out there and earn for yourself comes from the Lord. A lot of people get that mixed up. Well, it's my money. I went out there and earned it. Yes, that's true. You did. But your breath comes from the Lord. Everything you have comes from the Lord. Everything you have. He is the provider of all resources. And as we consider this idea of stewardship, is anything really ours? No. No, if I drop dead right now, they'd hose my car off and sell it to somebody else. That's just how it goes. My clothes would be gone. My things would be gone. My instruments, all my possessions, they'd be gone to somebody else because that's simply how it works. It doesn't belong to you, really. It all comes from the Lord. And the Lord is gracious to us. Consider this. James 1:17 tells us, every good and perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Psalm 24:1 tells us that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. This truth is foundational to our understanding of stewardship because it reminds us to look past the distribution point to the ultimate source, which is the Lord. And it is foundational. If there's anything I can get through to you this morning, it is this, that you don't make your money. The Lord provides you with resources. The Lord provides you with exactly what it is that you need. And if you don't have it, it is simply because you don't need it. It all comes from the Lord. And if we can develop that level of trust in the Lord, all of a sudden we find that it becomes not so prickly talking about our finances. Because it all comes from him. People that, when the preacher gets up here and starts talking about it and they start grabbing onto their wallet, that tells me something. They either don't trust the church or they don't trust God. And if you don't, and I say this kindly, but if you don't trust the church, I would say have a conversation with somebody about that. If you have a legitimate concern, come talk. You know, we'd be happy to have a conversation about that. But if you don't, because we're human beings and things can, I understand all that. But if it's a problem that way, have a conversation with somebody. We can discuss these things. But if it's a problem with the Lord, you're just going to have to swallow that. We're just going to have to move on with this thing. and learn how to trust him. He is good and gracious, and everything that is good has come from him. We have to trust him. We have to trust that he's where it comes from. This truth is foundational to the idea of stewardship. If we can't trust God, we're never going to see ourselves as stewards. We're going to see ourselves as kings. And that's not how God intends us to view ourselves. When King David and the Israelite leaders made the lavish gift for the building of the temple, David recognized God as the source of all wealth. Go with me to 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 10. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 10. David blessed the Lord before all the congregation, and David said, "Blessed be thou, Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness, and the power, and the glory, and the victory, and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from thee, and thou reignest over all. And in thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand it is to make great and to give strength unto all." Now get this, there is great security in recognizing God as the owner of all things. Because if you make a dollar, there's a lot of potential for you to either misspend it, misuse it, or just flat out lose it. If you invest that dollar, there's potential for gain, but there's also potential for loss. But if you trust the Lord with it, he'll take care of it, and you can trust him with it. Our security is in God himself. Should every national economy fail tomorrow, he won't. And that is something that we need to trust. God made it all, God owns it all, and God entrusted to our care to enjoy, but also to steward appropriately. So we look at that. That is the provider of resources. That is the character of God, a perfect, holy, huge God that loves you, has given himself for you, but wants you to steward his resources appropriately the way that he wants. That is the provider of the resources. Now we're going to look at the people of his provision. Letter B, the people of his provision. What are we in this thing? We are managers of a trust. That's all we are. The essence of our lives is not ownership, trying to accumulate more and more. It is stewardship, managing the resource God has given us. And Randy Alcorn, he has a great quote. I'll read this quote verbatim. "If God was the owner, I was the manager. I needed to adopt a steward's mentality towards the assets he had entrusted, not given to me." A steward manages assets for the owner's benefit. The steward carries no sense of entitlement to the assets he manages. It's his job to find out what the owner wants done with his assets, then carry out his will. A quote from Randy Alcorn. I think that's very good. It is our job to meet with the owner, decide what he wants, and then our job, as we just go through our day, is just to make that happen. And we will leave the results up to him. Oftentimes, we think of financial stewardship, we relate it primarily to giving, and that is true. Financial stewardship is giving. But financial stewardship is not just giving. Because what we find is people oftentimes, when they get excited about something, they don't have a problem giving. When you get somebody excited about something, they'll empty their pockets for it. And, you know, praise the Lord, that's a good thing. I think churches need more of that because things need to happen, ministries need to take place. People need to get saved, and if dollars are not flowing through ministries, it becomes much, much harder to do that. But that's not all that it is. It is your personal financial portfolio. How are you managing your own finances? Are you managing every dollar the way that the Lord would have you to do it? In our stewardship, God blesses us according to our ability to steward for him. Some people are eager to promise that if they had resources, they would gladly give it all to the Lord's work. And if they had more, they would diligently live by a budget. Here's the problem. Most times, they don't presently give and save from the resources they already have. They don't. And I'm not trying to be unkind, but that's just the fact of the matter. There's another quote here. It's by an unknown author. It says, "It's not what you do with the million if fortune should e'er be your lot, but what are you doing at present with the dollar and quarter you've got?" I gave you that information in the beginning to contextualize what I'm talking about right now, because what most people say is, I make this much money, and because I make this much money, I cannot budget or tithe or give to missions or anything else. And I would say this, God has given you exactly this much money so that you can budget and tithe and give to missions and everything else. It's, and listen, I understand it, because there are times of life where you don't make very much money. There are lean seasons. There are things that happen. But one thing that will help you is to really steward the resources in the benefit of the Lord. Because listen, if you're doing that, you might not spend $15 at Chipotle if it's a little tight that month. You might not spend your money here or there. You might not find your dollars going and wondering where they went if you're stewarding it on behalf of somebody else. The single determining characteristic of a steward's success is not volume, it's faithfulness. 1 Corinthians 4:2 tells us this, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found," get this, "faithful." Not rich, not wealthy. The normality of our world is poverty, okay? That's normal. Rich is not normal. Middle class is not normal. Poverty, as we just saw, is the normal of the world, okay? So it obviously, it can't hinge on that. "Moreover, it's required a steward, a man be found faithful." That's the only requirement for stewardship. When a church or a business hires an outside accounting firm to audit their books, the CPAs, they're not really... they're not so much concerned with the volume. There are churches out there that do 50 times what this church does in terms of how much money they move. Okay? It's not necessarily the volume, it's the accuracy that they're looking for. They're not looking for volume, and they're not impressed by volume, and they're not upset by a small number in the till. They're impressed by accuracy, and they get concerned when there's inaccuracy. Similarly, our faithfulness in stewarding our resources according to God's will is far more important than the volume of resources we have to steward. So we see there the distribution of resources. The provider of the resources is a just, holy God who loves you and gave himself for you. The people of his provision are the stewards of the resources who are tasked with managing them with the mind of God instead of their own interests. Number two, we're going to look at the demonstration of stewardship. The demonstration of stewardship. There were three servants in this story. It's easy to see that they fell into two categories: faithful and unfaithful. So number one, we look at the faithful steward. The faithful steward. Two of the servants, they got that money. The businessman said, "Hey, I'm going out of town. I'm going to be gone for a while. I'm going on a journey. Here, here's this. Take five or take two and turn it into more." That was the task. And the two faithful servants went and traded with the same. The interest these men made was not gleaned from a few lucky transactions. In fact, the story specifically states it was a long time before the master returned. And through those days, the two faithful servants were diligently and consistently doing business with their master's money. Diligently and consistently. We see that in verses 16 and 17. "Then he that had received the five talents went and traded with the same, and made them other five talents. And likewise, he that received two, he also gained other two. And side note, based on that principle, with our money, we should be very cautious about get rich quick. It doesn't work. It does not work. It works. They make it work for enough people to give you belief in it. They stack the deck for a small amount of people to make you think it can happen. But it doesn't really work. The Lord blesses diligence over a long period of time. Most millionaires are above the age of 50. Matthew 25, verses 16 and 17 indicates this to us. But get this, what should our mindset be during these things? 1 Timothy 6:9 tells us, "But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." Now this verse, it's not really speaking about having wealth or not having wealth. Abraham had wealth. Job had wealth. So wealth in itself isn't the problem, but it's when you get it in your mind that your ultimate goal is to make money, which is by most estimations empty and hollow. That's going to lead you to a very dangerous position of destruction and perdition. It warns against this idea of, I will be rich at all costs. It has been said that money is a great servant, but it's a poor master. And the eyes of man are never full. You hunt for it, you're just going to want more. There's a reason Jeff Bezos is still working. He still gets up and works. And not on pet projects, on Amazon, because he wants to make money, because it's never enough. And I'm not saying his wealth is bad or inappropriate. I'm saying that it's never going to quench. You'll never be full if that's what you're hunting for. The Bible teaches us to be content. But nonetheless, the two faithful servants were successful because they maintained a stewardship mentality. Their greatest pleasure and highest goal was not in gaining, but in pleasing their master. That is the difference. So that is the faithful steward. And we're going to look at the faithless steward. The third servant panicked. And instead of investing his talent, he dug a hole and buried it deep. And we know some people like that, don't we? Tuck tail and run. Fight or flight, they run. The unfaithful servant was the polar opposite of the two faithful servants. He sought to protect his own interests, protecting his own name, and in doing so, he lost the opportunity for advancement. And the master pointed that out. He could have done something. He could have made some kind of a conservative something. He could have, I don't know, in today's language, he could have put it in a CD and made minimal interest. He could have at least put it in a savings account and made something, but he literally took it and just buried it in the ground because he was protecting his own name and his own interest, and he didn't want to lose what he had. And there's something about being a Christian that calls us to more than that level of defensive, scared attitude about life. We ought to be risk takers. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying you go out and you put all your money on the next horse race. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is, are you willing, if we're applying this to Christian life, are you willing to get up and move to a different country if the Lord calls you to do it? Are you willing to drain your 401k to be a missionary and move somewhere if the Lord calls you to that work? This steward would not have done that because he didn't care what the master wanted. He cared about what he wanted. Which servant best identifies you? Are you faithfully stewarding your finances for God? Or are you lacking faith in God's goodness and hoarding resources for yourself? That's a tough question to answer. I like this one. This is funny. This is a cute little illustration he wrote right in here. And I've heard this one before, and I think it's cute. The story is told of a man who asked God, "What is a million years to you, God?" "Like a second to you," God answered. "What is $10 million to you?" the man questioned next. God replies, "Like a dime." "Well then," the man continued, sure his case was set, "may I have a dime?" "Sure," God responded, "just a second." Give you a second on that one. Sometimes, instead of faithfully filling our role as stewards, we try to better our financial position by manipulating God. Or we attempt to manufacture quick success without hard work. A faithful steward operates with consistent discipline through the years, like the faithful servant in Jesus' parable. When we see our resources as belonging to God and determined to use them to advance His cause, we find that is success. Success is pleasing the Lord. It doesn't matter what you have. You could be making, I don't know, you could be making $8 an hour. You could be making $88 an hour. Is any of that going to impress anybody? It's not going to impress the Lord. But what will please the Lord is if you take your 8 or your 88 and you use that strategically for Him in the way that He wants it to be used. So we see the difference between the faithful and the faithless steward. And then third, this day's coming, we see the day of reckoning. The day of reckoning. In this day of reckoning, we see a call to accountability. One day, the businessman returned. The first people he called for the appointment were three servants to whom he had entrusted talents. It's a counting day for them. And no doubt they had to have been excited because they diligently worked, they took their time, they made proper, prudent financial decisions with what this Lord had blessed them with, and it had returned in the way that they thought it would, and they see the Lord coming home. And for those two people, it becomes an exciting day because you get to go to the person who gave you these resources and say, look, I took this and I made it more just like you asked for. That's an exciting day when you see Him coming in that light. Matthew 25:19 tells us, after a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. But we see a call to accountability. And listen, friends, someday in your life, there's going to be a call to accountability. Someday in your life, sooner or later, the Lord is going to hold you accountable to how you dealt with His resources. I'm not saying that like a club over your head. But I'm saying that to warn you. The way that you manage your finances matters. It's relevant to God. He is aware of it. He is thinking about it. He is observing it. And He has a specific plan for it. And one day quicker than you realize, He's going to come asking how you did. And how are you going to be able to answer Him? Well, if you were faithful, He'll commend you. We see a commendation to the faithful. The first two servants were eager to show the master their portfolios. It's there black and white. They had doubled his money. The master was pleased and praised them, both in word and by entrusting them with more. Matthew 25, verse 23, mirrors verse 21. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. It's easy to talk about faithfulness and to assume we are faithful just because we have the desire to be, just because we can look like we are. But what does faithful stewardship look like in terms of our day-to-day operations? There's five distinguishable habits, and I left your room, you might want to write these down. There's five distinguishable habits that are consistently present in those who wisely handle their finances. Number one, they work diligently. God blesses hard work. Through the Bible, God commends diligence. We see that in Proverbs. Proverbs 10:4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Proverbs 12:24. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. Proverbs 13:4. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Proverbs 21:5. The thought of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty only to want. And then Proverbs 22:29. Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men. Diligence is not a gift, friends. It's a character trait. It's not to be hinged on location or position. A truly diligent person is going to be a hard worker between jobs, even if they are not presently employed. It's a character trait. So that's number one. Number two, you have to transfer ownership. Transfer ownership. Look, there's a preacher out there that I know. Everything he wears has his name on it somewhere. On his cuff, on his hat, on his lapel, on his jacket. Everything he has his name on it. He's got a hanky with his own logo on it. I have opinions about that. I won't get into those. But what I'm saying to you is people who operate that way, they want their name on everything. And I get it, if you run a business, Joe Myers runs a business. Myers Tires and Truck. He has to have his, because that's a business. That's different. I'm not talking about that. But people who are making merchandise of their own name, just because they want their name recognition, do you know what that is? Ownership. It's mine. That's what that is. That's not stewardship. Stewardship is transferring the ownership to the Lord, because that's who really owns it. You have to transfer that ownership. Number three, you have to steward efficiently. Listen, just because you can doesn't mean you should. We have a world of abundance. We live in a country of abundance. We saw in the beginning figures, our state is almost double what the world average is on lifestyle. And that affords us a lot of opportunity to really bless ourselves. But just because you can doesn't mean you should. Steward efficiently. 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8 says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." In addition to contentment, we need wise discernment in our budgeting. Now get this, it's not wise budgeting for those who are struggling to purchase groceries and pay their electric bill to maintain a cable television subscription. Sometimes we need to step back and evaluate our financial priorities. Then lastly, and this is important because Americans, we struggle with this one, save regularly. It's wise to retain or to save as long as you remember that your savings belong to the Lord as well, and you have to be willing to let them go if He calls you to do that. You know, some people, they struggle with that. They struggle with saving because they want to give it out. I have it. It should be used for the Lord. We want to give it out. Well, no. You need to have some kind of a fund for your rainy days. Proverbs 11:16 says this, "A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches." So you have to be willing to hold some back for a rainy day, because if you give everything out and then a disaster strikes you, then all of a sudden you're going to be asking for it back. And you could have just held on to a little bit to make sure that you kept some margin in your life. There's wisdom in that. And then I apologize. This is actually the last one. Give generously. Give generously. Just as diligence and contentment are disciplines, so is giving. Giving is not a matter of can or can't. It's a matter of will or won't. Right. You can like that or not like that, but that's true. I have found that to be true in my own life. Then lastly, we see a condemnation to the unfaithful. We'll be done here in 1 minute. It was time for the third servant to give his report. Matthew 25, verses 24 and 25 say this, "Then he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid the talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast, that is thine." Basically, he said, "I knew I couldn't please you. You gave me too much to manage, so I did nothing." That is no way to behave with the Lord's money. And the words were mean. "Wicked and slothful servant." I would hate to be called a wicked and slothful servant. He was condemned as unfaithful. Now, in conclusion here, we'll wrap up with this. Our decisions and disciplines in managing God's resources reflect our heart. Are you a good steward of God's estate? That's the question of the hour. It's not how much you have. It really has nothing to do with that at all. It's not how much you have. It's how well are you managing it for the Lord? God does not need our money. God can multiply it as he deems appropriate. God will use it for his purposes. But in order to do that, that's all predicated on us managing our resources, stewarding our finances appropriately. Are we doing that? If you're not, and you need help, there's plenty of people who are willing to help. You just got to ask. Okay? All right, well, that's the Sunday school lesson for today. I stole 4 of your minutes. I apologize. It's 9:48, I believe, or 10:48. That's it. We are dismissed, and we will move on in about 11 minutes with the main service. Thank you.